Thank you all for being here. And how exciting is this, right?
Woo!
Yeah. This is good stuff. Nice to be here. Today is Thursday, March 21st, 2019. The time is 9:37 a.m. We will begin the meeting for the Regional Growth Committee at Wasatch Front Regional Council. Welcome to all of you. I'm Dawn Ramsey, and I don't think we're not going to go around and do introductions. I think we all
Can we?
If we have time, that would be awesome.
Yeah,
I mean, I really would like that, but
please.
You never. Okay. Yeah. Well, we do have some new help here, some fun new faces participating. So let's start on this end.
I'm Mary Pratt. I'm the administrative assistant of the
This is Mary's first week at WFRC, so welcome, Mary.
Okay. Happy to have you here.
And Katie's already Heather's responsible for the staff.
Heather is responsible for the signs that you all said helped you find your way in here. So, good job, Heather.
So great.
Jim Talbot, Parkinson City.
Leonard, are you with Salt Lake?
Dave McCall, Toronto City.
Bob Danoy, Roy City.
Mark Allen, Washington Terrace City.
Jim Harvey, Weber County.
Aaron Mendenhall, Air Quality Board.
Evan Curtis, Governor's Office of Management and Budget.
Jeff Scott, Box Elder County.
Tina Cannon, Morgan County.
Ted Knowlton, Wasatch Front Regional Council staff. And I'll just note that I am your key contact for the Regional Growth Committee. So if you ever need anything, I'm your person.
Dawn Ramsey, South Jordan City Mayor, representing the Utah League of Cities and Towns.
Andrew Gruber with WFRC.
Amy Winder Newton, Salt Lake County.
Reed Ewing, University of Utah.
Christine Richmond, GSBS Consulting, representing the Urban Land Institute, not the Governor's Office of Management, where I worked 15 years ago.
We're just seeing the future.
We're going to claim
or the past.
Rachel Adam, Utah League of Cities and Towns.
Kirk Bradford, New York City.
Ari Broding, Division of Utah.
Will Summercorn, Salt Lake County, representing the Utah Association of Counties.
Ron Bigelow, West Valley City.
Let's start right here. Yes.
Bryn Mortensen, Salt Lake Chamber.
Debbie Sigmund, Green.
Roger Borgman, Utah Convention.
Mike Reberg, Salt Lake County.
Samantha Gilmore, New
York. Dory Donner, Regional Council.
Andrea Olson, Department of Transportation, Region 1.
Jason Wheeler, with the Sys.
Trevor O'Neill, the Salt Lake City Council Office.
Thank you. We have three more who have just joined us, so we're going to put you right on the spot and just start over here with Beth and just have you tell everybody who you are and who you represent.
Beth Holbrook, Utah Transit Authority. I just walked here, so.
Yeah.
Good.
Jenny Wilson, Salt Lake County. What a great room and space, and glad to be here.
Great.
And I'm Laura Hansen with UTA.
Thank you all for being here. Before we proceed, I'm going to. I'm sorry, I didn't go to this side. Start right up here.
Ned Hacker with the Regional Council staff.
I'm Lauren Victor, WFRC.
Chrissy Dahlberg, WFRC staff.
Scott Pest, WFRC staff.
Scott Pest, New Council staff.
Susie Swindler, WFRC staff.
Thank you. We certainly cannot not look to this side. None of us would even be able to do what we do without everyone to say thank you.
Amen.
Thank you all for being here. So I'd like to just turn a minute over to Andrew so he can maybe talk about this fabulous new space. This is exciting stuff. So big day for you. And we're going to welcome Mayor Riding, who's on his way in right now. So now you're off the hook from introductions. Mayor Riding, West Jordan. And take it away.
Thank you so much, Mayor. And I'll just be really brief. We are so excited to welcome you all here to our new home. It's been a while in the making. Those of you that have been working with WFRC for a long time know that we have been talking about moving our offices to an area that is more centrally located, where you can access it by multiple modes of transportation, so we can practice what we preach. And it's kind of remarkable that it has actually happened. So we're very, very happy. And the reason that we're happy is because we want to be able to welcome all of you and have WFRC fulfill its mission of being a convener of folks from all over the region. So we look forward to spending a lot of time with you here at WFRC, and then continuing to be out with you in your communities. I do just want to note, 1 week from today will be the first full WFRC council meeting here on Thursday at 2 p.m. And then at 4 p.m. will be, may I grab this?
Absolutely.
Some of you have a card like this. We're going to have an open house from 4 to 6 to welcome people to our new office and to celebrate the 50th anniversary of the Wasatch Front Regional Council since its founding in 1969. There's a lot of great things turning 50 this year. We're just really, really happy to have you all here. So thank you very much. And for those of you that want, immediately when the meeting concludes, we'll do a quick loop tour. So if you want to go on a quick loop tour after the meeting is over, we're happy to. Katie?
And then also about the parking validations. If you did not grab a parking validation on your way in, make sure you stop at the front desk to grab one on your way out.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Mayor.
Great. Thank you. And thanks again for the signs. The signs were super helpful. Could you use them every time for the next few months? That'd be great.
Yes.
First up, our first action item is minutes from the January 17th, 2019 meeting. We need to review the minutes from January 17th. They were sent out to everyone. Are there any comments, questions, any changes to be made? Seeing none, I'll entertain a motion to approve the minutes from January 17th, 2019.
So moved.
Second. Motion. Who made the second? Sorry. And we have a second.
Tina Cannon is the motion, and Jeff Scott is the second.
Thank you. Any further discussion? All in favor of approving the minutes from January 17th, please say aye.
Aye.
Those minutes are approved. Next is the opportunity for public comment. Do we have anyone here that would like to comment right now and to address this body on any concerns that you might have or ideas you want to share? The time is now yours. Okay, seeing none, we will close our public comment period. Today's agenda, it's exciting. We have developed this agenda with items that relate to each other. We start by looking at the legislative session to learn about what bills affect growth, especially housing and transportation, and things that we should all be aware of. Then on item 4, we'll go to the Wasatch Choice Vision discussion, and we're going to have an open discussion about what we can do to help each other address key housing needs and the requirements of Senate Bill 34. Then the question of what types of changes tend to make a bigger difference is then going to be addressed in item 5, and we appreciate having Professor Ewing here from the University of Utah, who's going to give us a presentation on the impacts of community design. And last, we have the local assistance program, our transportation and land use connection. We'll touch base on the plan for the program for this calendar year after the legislative session. This directly relates to the conversation that we're going to be having today. So with that, we're on number 3, 2019 legislative session, implications for our region's growth, housing, and transportation. Let's get started with a closer look at this legislative session. This was, as always, there was a lot that went on, right? That's how it always is. And we have the brilliant and probably still very tired Lanise Davenport here to highlight some of the important bills from the 2019 legislative session that affect our region's growth, housing, and transportation. So, Lanise, take it away.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can you hear me okay? Okay. We're going quiet. For some reason, you can't hear me. Do one of these, because this is new, right, for all of us, so welcome. So let me start the conversation by highlighting a few key things from the 2019 legislative session. If I had to describe this last session in one word, I would say it was like a roller coaster. It was very much like very high, very passed fast pace, and then it was like, wait, what's going on? What are we doing? Very fast pace moves, right? Last year, I would say, it would be like a Lamborghini or a Ferrari in the high gear the whole time. So it's interesting how each of these sessions go. We did pass a record number of bills. Can anybody guess how many bills were passed this last session?
Rachel, you can't answer, Rachel.
Anybody other than Rachel? Yes, Ari. 573. 573. So a record number of bills.
Did you know that, Rachel?
And then
74.
We also had a record budget. Does anybody know what the budget was that was passed?
Everybody did.
$19 billion budget. So it was a big year. It's a big year. We are going to highlight a few. Our plan for the day. Andrew is going to talk about transportation, the technical planning assistance program, and tax reform. I'm going to highlight the housing bill, Senate Bill 34, and some key air quality bills and appropriations. And then Ted Knowlton is actually going to walk us through a good conversation around how we implement or what some of the next steps are regarding Senate Bill 34 for the housing conversation. So with that, I'm actually going to turn the time over to Andrew, who will walk us through these first three bills.
Okay, thanks, Lanise. And I'm going to be brief on the transportation bills. So Senate Bill 72 was passed. And I want to, before I talk about that, I want to remind everybody, Senate Bill 72 was actually a follow-on to the significant transportation reform bill that was passed last year. That was Senate Bill 136. And if you want, there's a summary in your packet of Senate Bill 136. You don't need to look at it now, but if you want to, you can. But just as a reminder, that's the bill that did a few things, including creating the new state transit transportation investment fund, authorizing state infrastructure dollars to be spent on transit for the first time. It also required UDOT to modify their prioritization process for their existing transportation investment fund. That's the fund that's about $700 million a year that goes principally towards UDOT road capacity projects. And what it did is it asked UDOT to modify that prioritization criteria to look at a broader vision for transportation, what they have labeled U-Vision. And many of us are working with UDOT in developing that. And then also asked UDOT to consider land use and economic development in the prioritization of transportation funds. I mean, I think you all as elected officials know that your transportation, your housing, your economic development, your air quality, all of these things fit together. And now the direction we're heading as a state is to be breaking down, continuing to break down those silos in the decision making around how do we decide on where and how to invest transportation, not just narrow lens of transportation metrics like congestion or safety, which are very important, of course, but also what's the relationship to land use and housing and economic development. So that's what Senate Bill 136 encouraged, which, by the way, is very consistent with a lot of the work that we do here at WFRC on the broader Wasatch Choice vision that Ted is going to talk about a little bit later. So Senate Bill 136 did those things and also made modifications to the UTA governance structure. Beth is here as a product of that happening, so thank you, Beth. And it also created a new task force. So this is last year's bill created a new task force, and that task force met through the summer, through the interim period, and that led to the creation of Senate Bill 72, which was a follow-on bill. It did a variety of technical things, but it made some further modifications to the nominations process for the UTA board, for the local option transportation sales taxes. We refer to these as the corridors, 0.25%. It made some modifications and made them the eligible uses more flexible. So those local options, which now in the four principal Wasatch Front counties, Utah, Salt Lake, Davis, and Weber, all four of those local options are imposed, so there's a uniform rate across all four counties, which from a tax policy perspective and a transportation perspective is very good policies. Tooele, Morgan, Box Elder, Wasatch, Summit have varying degrees of rates in those areas. But what this bill did is it made more flexible and consistent the eligible uses for those local option transportation sales taxes, giving more flexibility and consistency for the local governments. And then I was talking about the TIF, UDOT's Transportation Investment Fund. It also, for those of you that care about active transportation, biking, walking, what this bill, Senate Bill 72, did is said explicitly for the first time, those TIF dollars can be used on active transportation now, pursuant to rules that are developed by the State Transportation Commission. So the way to think about Senate Bill 72 is a furtherance of SB 136 last year in the transportation space. And we are continuing to work with UDOT and all the other stakeholders, with UTA and everybody else, on implementing those changes that I've just been talking about. This year, if you think about it, I'm not going to talk about it, but Senate Bill 34 is, in a way, it's the housing side corollary. We did a lot on transportation. Senate Bill 34 looks at housing, and both of them say, think of these things together, not in silos. So we think really great progress for the state, really, really terrific progress. Any questions on the transportation bills? Okay, moving on. Did anybody hear there was a discussion about tax reform this year? Some people have said that the grade for the legislative session could be or should be incomplete, because there was tons of discussion around tax reform. You've all heard it a million times. Broaden the sales tax base, lower the rate, addressing some of the structural issues in Utah's tax policy. That did not happen. We all know this, right? The big effort to move forward on tax reform did not get through the legislature this year. We think wisely the legislative leadership and the governor's office said, let's take a little more time. The chamber was very involved in that as well. Let's take a little more time. And they set up, under House Bill 495, a task force. You get the sense, we love task forces in Utah, don't we? The Tax Restructuring and Equalization Task Force, that bill sets up a no less than 10-member task force with representation from the House and Senate and potentially some additional members, with the eye towards having public meetings around the state and then coming back and making a final report in August back to the legislature, with the notion that there would be a special session that would be could implement tax reform. Now, most of the conversation around tax reform in the past session was around sales tax. But the charge of this task force is to look beyond sales tax. Sales tax, income tax, property tax, transportation taxes, to look very broadly. So essentially everything is on the table. I would say that working really closely with the League of Cities and Towns, the Association of Counties, the Chamber, other stakeholders, UTA very closely, the implications of tax reform are broad, but also will have a very direct effect on every city and every county. Every entity that is either a taxing body or a recipient of tax dollars through the state's 19 local option transportation tax, or local option taxes, several of which are transportation focused. So this is not just a broad policy conversation about the state taxes. It is also, there's 1,000 or 1,000,000 details to work through on the implications of changing tax structure for all of these individual taxes. Along with our partners, were very engaged in the dialogue about the implications of tax reform for local governments and for transportation, and made really good progress in that dialogue, but it was not done. And so everybody should anticipate lots more discussion and being involved in this as we go forward. At our council meeting next week, Representative Mike Schultz, who was one of the point people on tax reform, who was also the House's appointee to the Wasatch Front Regional Council, is going to be at our meeting, and he's going to talk to us a little bit more about that. Anything on tax reform anybody wants to say? Okay, last thing. We're going to talk at the end of this meeting. Megan Townsend, who I think I saw come in, our Transportation and Land Use Connection Program Manager. The TLC program is the program that WFRC created in collaboration with Salt Lake County, UDOT, and UTA to provide funding to local communities, well, really technical assistance to local communities to deal with challenging growth issues. And it's a great partnership with the county and with UDOT and with UTA. We're going to be announcing the awards for the upcoming year at the end of this meeting. However, also the state appropriated $1 million for next year's budget for programs like TLC around the whole state, technical planning assistance. Those funds are not available yet. I mean, the governor hasn't even signed the bill yet, but that will be a dialogue that will happen over the course of the upcoming months with all of the stakeholders on what is going to be the utilization and approach for those funds. I should mention, this is the last thing I'll say, is that we were anticipating that that funding stream was going to be an ongoing funding stream, meaning it would come every year indefinitely. But along with many, many other appropriations in the final budget deal, that was converted to one time, meaning it's in the budget for next year, but who knows what happens after that. This is that what Senate President Stuart Adams said, there's 300 million reasons for people to stay involved in tax reform, because that's the amount of money that was sort of held in one time for all these programs across the state government to say, hey, we've got to get tax reform worked out so we can figure out the implications for the budget. So this technical planning assistance, just little $1 million appropriation is in that boat as well. But it's great to have that support from the legislature. Okay, I think that's it for me.
Great. All right, let me highlight a few air quality bills and appropriations. So you all know that the governor had a goal of $100 million to fund air quality. We didn't quite reach the $100 million goal, but we did get up to $28.8 million. $28.8 million in one-time funding for air quality, and then an additional $45,400 in ongoing funding for air quality. So this just gives you an idea of flavor of the types of bills and appropriations that did pass. So these are things like more electric vehicle charging stations, to air quality messaging efforts, to replacing high polluting state vehicles. Some of the bills that passed range from funding a pilot for free fare transit on poor air quality days, to continuing resolutions that encourage retailers to purchase from refineries that manufacture Tier 3 gasoline, and that to replacing our wood stoves and our wood fireplaces to natural gas. So lots of good work on air quality this year. Let me move into Senate Bill 34, the Affordable Housing Bill. So in your packets, we cut off the presses. The summary of Senate Bill 34, so take a look there. And I'm just going to kind of provide an overview. We'll just obviously have a question at the end here, but that'll be sort of the general outline of the items that I'll discuss here. Some of the main changes, and Andrew did a nice job as usual, Olivia, we're highlighting how this bill affects local governments. This is really the local government leveraging point for integrating transportation, land use, and economic development. What does that actually look like, right? It requires all local governments to update your general plan. There's three elements of a general plan: the transportation, the land use, and the housing, the moderate-income housing element. So in terms of the land use element of a general plan, communities must now consider where to locate housing for persons with all types of income levels. That's the one key element there. For the transportation and traffic circulation element of the general plan, there's four major changes there. A big win for active transportation is you must now consider active transportation when you're developing your transportation element. Second, you must plan for housing and commerce near transit stations. Third, correlate your transportation element, so that element of your general plan, with the land use element of your general plan. It seems obvious and intuitive, but that's never really been codified or in law before, that you actually look at these elements together. And you must also consider population employment projections. Finally, on the transportation element, is that you consider your region's long-range transportation plan developed by the MPOs, the Metropolitan Planning Organization. So of course, we really like that one. All right, some major changes in the moderate income housing element of the general plan. So these changes are for cities with a population of more than 5,000. So who in this room is a city with a population greater than 5,000? It's most of us, right? Like that's, most of us have that. So this affects most all of you, in addition to counties. So what we have to do here, you have to prepare and adopt a moderate income housing plan by December 1st of 2019. In that moderate
Wait, income December 1st, 2019. Yeah. So that's pretty fast. Okay.
Thank you. Fine point on that. You must facilitate an opportunity for the variety of housing to include moderate income housing, and then analyze how you will provide a realistic opportunity for the development of moderate income housing within the next 5 years. So the point there, you need to look at moderate income housing as an element of overall housing in your community. The Senate Bill 34, actually, I think did a really nice job of articulating what some best practices or what some options that you as local governments can do to implement or grow the housing within your region. There's a list of 23, and I failed to recognize Rachel earlier, but Rachel Otto with the Utah League of Cities and Towns was really active in this legislation. And so please feel free, Rachel, to jump in anytime if you want to add anything to the conversation. But there's a list of 23 items, and they're highlighted in that Senate Bill 34 one-pager. These are really grouped into things like zoning or regulation, moderate income housing construction, rehabilitation or preservation activities, programs and services, and financial incentives. That's sort of the overarching categories of all of those different items that you can choose from. If you do not have a transit station in your community, you pick three from that list of 23. If you do have a transit station, you pick four, you pick three from the list, and then an additional item that's either item G or H in that venue, which are really geared towards transit. The bill did have, in earlier versions of the bill, ongoing and one-time appropriations to build lean buffer housing loan fund. Those appropriations were removed in a final bill. So no additional funding from the state for this effort, but Elaine Walker, they did make some revisions to the board makeup and some other things, which is good news. Okay, let me talk quickly about reporting and funding. So you have a big incentive to get this done, to get your moderate income housing element done, and then report on your efforts. Because if you do that, then you remain eligible for the state's $700 million Transportation Investment Fund TIF, or the Transit Transportation Investment Fund, the TTIP. So that's sort of the carrot slash stick on the appropriation on the funding for the bill. UDOT will still fund limited access facilities for major transit projects, so that's a good caveat to know. That's really all on Senate Bill 34, unless you have questions.
Lenise, just on the reporting, I just want to make clear, and this is all in the summary. So there's requirement to do the plan, the moderate income housing plan, as part of your general plan, and there is a requirement to do an annual report about the progress towards meeting the needs of low and moderate income housing, and progress on implementing what your community picks from that list of strategies. And so there's beefed up requirements for the plan itself, and then there's beefed up requirements for reporting on your progress. And then, like Lenise was saying, those progress reports, you post them publicly, you send them to DWS, you send them to your local MPO, and then the DWS, the State Department of Workforce Services, reviews those and does a yes or no. Thumbs up or thumbs down. You did your plan. You're fulfilling what you said you were going to do in your reporting requirements. You remain eligible. Or, nope, you're not eligible. So how that works is something that is yet to be figured out. There's a lot of details, not just for what you do as local communities, but then how this fits in with DWS and the transportation funding. A lot of details to be figured out still.
So just a question with that. We suggest the DWS then is in fact the approval point in terms of whether or not the community gets the TIP funds based on the up or down. Is that the interrelationship?
Sort of, yes and no. Go ahead, Rachel.
So with the eligibility piece, we're going to be working with DWS on the rulemaking process for how that will look.
Rachel, I'm being asked if you could speak up. They're having a hard time hearing. So just
you can pull that. That's a microphone in front of you, and you can pull it a little closer also.
Awesome. So we'll be working with DWS. This, the SB 34 to give them some rulemaking authority to work through how this annual reporting will look. So we've been working with them for the last several months on trying to simplify the current template for what your moderate income housing element looks like, and we're going to further simplify that. So it really should be sort of like a checklist of here are the options that your city is incorporating into their moderate income housing element. And DWS will look at that, and they won't be evaluating, you know, whether or not they think you're doing a great job or a poor job, or you know, whether they think, you know, you're doing something that you shouldn't be doing or vice versa. But it really will be, you know, here are the strategies you've picked. Are you reporting on how those are working? You know, whether or not that's the council is considering adopting an ADU ordinance 1 year, and then the next year it is, we've adopted it, but you know, at this point we've only licensed 3 ADUs, something like that. So as long as you're choosing options, you're reporting on the implementation, there won't be a significant evaluative component. It really will be an eligibility type component. And as I said, we're working with DWS on how that reporting form will look. And then if I just clarify one other thing. So for this does require cities that have a population of 5,000 or more, but only in counties of the first, second, and third class. So we're really trying to capture here, and this actually happened last year at HB 239. We reduced the number of cities that have to do this reporting. It's 81 cities statewide that have to report. So it's all cities in counties of the first, second, third, fourth class, and cities of 5,000 or more in those counties that are more rural, so that we're not overly burdening, you know, small cities that aren't really facing the same issues.
First, I think I'll need to be honest with you. Roy City, for 13 years, did not do what it was required to do by law, which is to submit until this last year the median housing requirement that DWS actually required. But we did it this last year. I think we're required to do that. We're required to do that every 2 years. And I think the legislation now does that every year.
Yes.
And so now the challenge is going to be, from my perspective, is to suggest is that that's one more gateway in order for us to be able to get the TIF funds. We have a number of projects that we really want to get fulfilled in Roy City, and I can only speak for myself, that requires that investment funding. And if we don't get this right, it basically puts that whole thing in holding pattern, which we can ill afford to do. And so we got to take another visual look in terms of what we're presenting into that report to the DWS and make sure it's right. So if the decision process basically includes them saying it's an up or down decision, then we get it right the first time.
Right.
No, before they have to come back the next year and wait another year if I can probably get those things. So this
Mayor,
is very important to us.
To that point, I don't want to, our intention in talking about this TIF and TTIF eligibility point is not to scare anybody, and you need to be aware of it, but the expectation is that, and this was not by accident that the bill came out the way it is. There was a lot of dialogue and negotiation with the League, with WFRC, with UDOT, with DWS, with the legislators. Nobody wants communities to lose eligibility. And that's part of why this menu of options is so broad, and you can pick and choose the things that really work for you. Every community should be able to satisfy the requirements. And as long as you adopt your plan and do your reporting, there shouldn't be any problem. Having said that, you are right that we need to pay really close attention to this, and we will, working through that DWS rulemaking process. And I will say that UDOT also has no interest in dinging communities and saying they're not eligible. They want to be able to provide the funds to communities where the investments are needed. And so there's a shared interest in not interfering with that flow, and we're going to be working on this and watching it very carefully for the points that you know.
I appreciate the comment, but it's truly in the legislation that we got approved from the version I read, the executive director was basically said, you shall not basically issue those TIF funds to communities that do not meet this requirement.
That's right.
And so, I mean, it was definitely a carrot stick option here, and I think that was actually made clear, and I think House speakers made it very clear that somebody says it may not be tough enough. So my point I want to suggest is, if I can just be an advocate of this, this is so important, in my opinion, to communities that meet the requirements. To ignore this could be dangerous. Let me make that clear. And so I'm actually waiting for the league to present something at their conference to help definitize this a little better for us, as well as all the documentation you provide. Because this is very, very important if we ever expect to use UDOT funds to help us to enhance our communities. So maybe I'm a little more too blunt, but address, just be aware.
You're right.
But my point is, this is very important to us, and I think we need to wake up and make sure we read it.
Mayor, you bring up really, really good points that I think need to be heard and addressed, and a larger conversation around each of those items needs to be heard. And guess what? That's the next item on the agenda.
Yes, it is.
is going to walk us through basically what set up our means to the region, to local government.
Really quickly, before we turn the time to Ted, I think Rachel had one more thing she wanted to add.
And thank you for your comments, Mayor. Just to add, we will be spending a lot of time on this at our conference. And then also, we'll, in conjunction with Utah APA, and May, Brian on our staff, will be doing numerous trainings on the actual implementation of SB 34 to help communities.
We'll be doing a session at the conference.
Yeah.
You're going to get sick of talking about this, basically. We're going to talk about it so much. Did we already read? We're sick of it. No. Okay.
Thank you. Okay, Ted.
Okay, thanks, Madam Chair. So we knew that this represents a pretty significant new bill that affects you potentially in pretty dramatic ways, and that it relates a lot to the work that we have been doing together at Wasatch Front. And so we wanted to drill down and talk about it a bit more. There are two objectives I want to briefly touch on before we get into a discussion. One is, I'll just set the stage briefly on this item of SB 34, and then later on, after our discussion, we want to touch base on what's to come with regard to Wasatch Choice Vision and the Regional Transportation Plan. And the reason is that in May, you're going to recommend to the full council adoption of that plan. And so that's...
We hope they will.
They'll recommend something. But anyway, that is the culmination of a four-year process. And so we don't want to leave that agenda item without touching on what you can expect looking ahead. So, and Jory Johnner will help me with that. All right, so somebody can forward the slides for me.
Yeah, Heather.
Is that correct? Okay, so this is a summary, again, one page, a companion to what you have printed. SB 34 asks you to connect your local planning, land use and transportation, to regional transportation, to plan for development around major transit, to improve the connections between homes and jobs. So there's three pieces to that triangle there: transportation, homes, destinations. The third point, think about projected growth. And the fourth point, just at the local level, are you thinking about what happens on your streets and your trails as you think about your local land use planning? So that's kind of the crux of it within the context of moderate income housing. So, you know, we looked at that as this was developing and we thought, you know, there is really good news for all of us, which is that that's been the crux of the conversation at Wasatch Front Regional Council for years. So go to the next slide. That is the story of Wasatch Choice 2050, which is very much to coordinate land use and transportation and to coordinate it at the local level to the regional level. Go to the next slide. It actually develops, as you know, a framework for geographically where roads, transit, trails go with regard to major destinations and key growth areas. So we're setting the stage together for doing this. I think it's a great message for the legislature as well, which is that within the Wasatch Regional Council, we have a leg up on doing this. But that doesn't mean Wasatch Choice 2050 meets the requirements of SB 34, obviously. But I just wanted to note that good news, which is that we can all be proud of the fact that we actually have a pretty big leg up on this. Now, Heather, go to the next slide. So that is my little introduction. And what I want to know to get started with this, and this is building on Mayor Dandoy's comments, how are you feeling about these basic requirements that are adding on to the earlier moderate income housing plan requirements? How are you feeling about the bill? What are some of your anxieties or things that you feel like, well, we need some help? And so I just want to open it up with a nice big broad question. What are your thoughts on this bill at this time, as you look out to a December 1 time frame, just to get things started? I can tell Mayor Bigelow that you want to talk about this. So.
Certainly for West Valley City, because we're a larger city, many of these we've already been doing. But looking at it, the issue that I try and put it into context, and that is these three or four requirements that they're saying you have to meet, I think it would be unwise of a city to limit themselves to those three or four. We really ought to be looking, and certainly from our city, we sat down and talked about it, and our goal is to meet some, you know, out of, I think there's 23, at least or close to 20 of those. Because the likelihood is the legislature, if you listen to their conversation the last few years, they are not going to loosen those up. The only reason they're looser is because the League of Cities and Towns weighed in and others to say, hey, you know, give us a chance. But it's pretty clear that the future plan is more and more requirements and more expectation. So as you're looking at your plans, you know, do more than just three or four. And especially as, I'm sure as we start, if the city hasn't done it, they'll be a little more lenient, but even in the definition of whether what you're doing meets it or not, will probably get more stringent. Not by statute, but just by practice. So, you know, your first year, yeah, they'll be kind a little bit. But next year, they'll expect it even better. And the year after, even better. So I think the cities that haven't been doing it are the ones that will be most impacted. For the larger cities that have large staffs, yeah, we've been doing it, and it's just not a big deal. But your medium or smaller cities will be definitely impacted. Just a comment.
Thank you. We certainly heard a lot of communities say, well, we feel like we're in pretty good shape in terms of the requirements of this. Now, there's two sides of that. One side is the menu. Again, three items to address if you don't have high capacity transit, and four items if you do. And then there are these items, which are separate from the menu. Have you interrelated your local transportation planning with your local land use planning? That's the bottom one. Have you considered growth projections in your planning? That's the third one down. And have you in your plans related your planning, land use and transportation, with regional infrastructure? And so I think that that might be one of the threads that haven't been explored as much. And so I'm wondering, how do you feel about that piece of it, not the menu? And part of it is do you feel like you're in good shape? Do you feel like, and I'm not trying to put anybody on the spot, but are there things that you think, well, here's some questions we have about that, or that's not clear, or let's talk about what that means. Any questions regarding just like what did the legislature mean when they talked about these things? Go ahead, Commissioner.
What do they mean by moderate income housing? I mean, that sounds like kind of a simple question, but moderate income moderate income housing in Box Elder County could be substantially different than it is in Summit County, Wasatch, along the Wasatch front, Morgan County. Does that mean a median price of $200,000 or is it a median price of $120,000? And so I think some of these discussions that the League will have at their conference, UAC will have at our conference, will be invaluable to kind of get on the same page so that we're in compliance.
Can you, apparently your microphone is not on. Does it have a red button? Does it have a red light or no?
No light.
Not at all? Okay. Can you say that again just a little
yeah,
bit louder?
Just repeat the whole
is a green light on?
There's no light on.
Here. The lights are on, but nobody's home.
Okay.
Should we
speak into
the yeah.
I think it's important that we have the same definition, that we know what median income means, if it's a dollar amount or if it's a percentage of housing in that particular geographic area.
Yeah, Rachel.
And if it's going to differentiate by county size, by population, density, and what those are. And so I think the conference of the League and UAC will be invaluable so that we're kind of on the same page so that it's not garbage in, garbage out.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Rachel, would you clarify that if you have any further information on that?
Yeah, I can try. So it will be site specific. It will be, I can't remember the technical term, maybe we'll inform, but it's the statistical population area. So, you know, Box Elder is obviously going to be different from places and things like that. So it is supposed to be, it's 80% or below. Of what that area median income is. So that it'll vary widely across the state. But the targets that you're hitting in the moderate income housing will be, and this actually happened last year with HB 259, will be 80%, 50%, and 30% of AMI in your specific area.
Thank you.
This is just kind of not addressing that question, but something I look at it and see with our council. Adjusting our plans is all fine and good. Giving councils to actually address the issues and actually follow the plan is going to be much more difficult. I really see a need for the state or the Regional Council to go through and start educating all of our citizens on the benefits we're going to have if we start addressing our goals smartly. Rather than if we just let it go where it's going to. I mean, all of the citizens need to be on board with this because you can have your plan in place, and when citizens start showing up at council meetings, those decisions get very, very hard. Unless we start educating everybody on the benefits of higher density and smart growth, it's just hard for councils to go ahead and do the right thing. Mm-hmm. I shouldn't see the way to follow these
principles. And I'd just like to echo that. I just, especially in Farmington where we've had such great growth over the last 10 years, our citizens are just really, every time there's a public hearing and any housing development comes in, period, it's extremely emotional. And even zoning property that has an overlay on it, to get site specific it's just becoming a real battle. And so my concern on this, I'm glad I have a really great planner because he can walk through this, but if it wasn't that we had that great planner and we'd gone through the explosion that we had in growth, I would be really, really, really concerned because this takes in a lot of information that for communities that haven't been aggressive in that, I think it would be very difficult. And I think it would be easy to say, are we being really penalized by Big Brother, for lack of better description? We're going to be penalized if we don't follow these things. Some people don't like to hear that, especially citizens. So it's just a comment, but I agree. It's tough to get councils. I mean, I know how we are in Farmington right now. We've got a lot going on with UDOT, WFRC, all of those things going through our community with highways. we are really trying to calculate when to bring those forward because it's much. Because people will get site-specific in the trouble, and it will be more difficult, which you're all probably experiencing. Just a comment, I want to make sure.
Great comment.
Not as air quality board, but I want to mention
that
ULCT did some great research for the cities on the issue of public surveying. We haven't seen that feedback. I'm sure Rachel can share it. I'm not sure what format it's in. But it was a really fascinating conversation with the public about what sort of a value laddering of where are the critical points and where would you actually feel supported? Where's your trust in growth in terms of the levels of government in the state? What I think it helps us to contemplate how to shape those conversations with communities. But I just want to throw that out there that the league's done some good work on that.
And I'd like to comment because I think there's some real merit to this conversation. We recognize the fact is that we're supposed to basically double in population over the next 20, 30 years. And when you start talking about a population of 6 million people, and 80% of those 6 million people are going to live along the Wasatch Front, you only got so much lake that you can basically lead into before you got to go rural. And you've got to start talking about stacking domes. And the irony, which I doubt most public people recognize, is a lot of these people are here are our children. They just don't want to go anywhere else. And so there's a responsibility on the part of the state to provide, in essence, some type of livable condition and employment condition and transportation elements to accommodate them because they want to be here. And you don't want to get so high in the mountains before the Forest Service basically says you can't build up there anymore. So there's a real ignorance, and that's a hard word, but it's reality, but I don't think most people realize this. And it's almost self-inflicting. We're doing it for ourselves because we like big families, and we might like this community, and we like what we're doing, and so do our children. And so I think the bottom line is education is paramount here. And if the answer to the question is the governor's office needs to get on there and take those 30 seconds, 60 seconds blips and start talking about what the future holds, then maybe the population that we're all experiencing is, and it's absolutely true. You don't talk high density in certain cities, including mine. Those are four-letter words. Reality is I'm trying to get a text that says medium density, because everything beyond just the standard household is high density, and that's not true. But we got to change the terminology. But the fact of the matter is, unless we convince the populace, then the bottom line is going to be this, is that I don't care if the neighboring city has high density, but it's not going to happen in my city. And that's the city council's position and the population's position. Anywhere else but mine, that will not and cannot work. It cannot work if we're going to accommodate a double of our population on the Wasatch Front. So how do we do this? And we do it smartly. And oh, by the way, if I could be pretty blunt, my grandkids don't want my half-acre lot. They do not want to basically spend a half a day going out there and mowing. That's not what they do. They have something else. So they want a townhouse. They want a condominium. That's not my generation. That is my kids' generation. And we've got to accommodate that requirement as well. And so here's my point. And if the Wasatch Front can help us, if the League can help us, let's educate the broader community. Because they just don't understand what's coming over the next 20 years. And if we don't plan it right today and plan for progress, we will react to progress. And that is the worst thing that happens in communities. We're constantly reacting to things that are going on. Help us figure out how to make the story straight. Let's get the population understanding what's coming. And let's plan for the future.
Thank you.
Yeah.
There's our spot.
I'm far from a microphone. I want to echo some of the same comments. You gave a very good Indigenous Utah speech. So, as recently as 2014, we did polling to show that people were basically in favor of growth. We're seeing that switch now. Right? People are now feeling like growth is going to make things worse. And that's terrifying to me because, as you mentioned, most of our growth is our own kids and grandkids. And when people think growth is caused by city councils, that's a problem. Yeah, if you want to know what growth is caused by, go back to your seventh grade health class, right? and so I think it's incumbent on all of us to get that message out that growth isn't an option. How we grow is what matters. That's our tagline. Right? That's what matters. One other thing I wanted to mention, in terms of the how we grow, that Wasatch Choice Vision does these things, as Ed mentioned, the connecting the planning to the transportation with the mixed-use centers located along the regional transportation areas and so on. So we at Envision Utah are working with a number of folks to put together a guide for how to build those centers and make them actually work. So watch for that, but also this is an invitation to tell us what would be helpful in that guide. What are the things you'd like help with in those mixed-use centers? Because I think doing those mixed-use centers checks a lot of these boxes, and also a lot of the items on the menu have to do with housing and mixed-use centers. So just by doing that, you can probably basically meet your requirements. It's an invitation to tell us what ought to be in that guide.
Thank you. Okay, we're going to move on in just a second. Go ahead, Mayor Bigelow.
A couple of points. First of all, a lot of resources available. Envision Utah, the League of Cities and Towns, Associated Counties, Wasatch Front, there are a lot of places. Plus, you can probably call upon your neighboring cities. The issue here is that the legislature is at the front of this way, but natural forces are going to force this issue regardless. For West Valley City, you know, we have been a residential farm community. It's just filled and filled with houses, every pasture. And all of a sudden, we ran out of land. We're 98% built out residential. And guess what? The developers are coming in and they're saying, okay, you've got to go up. You're in Salt Lake Valley. There's no more land, hardly. And so, yeah, we got our first seven-story apartment building. And, you know, and all the neighbors, every single one came in, even from our neighboring city, came in and said, no, don't do it. But who had to make the decision? The elected officials. And if they're not aware of what's happening, we could have turned that down. But we would have created a worse problem for the future. So we approved it. And really, the ones you have to educate first are your elected officials.
That's the reason why, for me, why I'm sitting and asking to be at the League's conference so that we can understand this. Because I agree with it starts with the council's understanding the future of this county, educate them, and then lead it to the public to understand why they're making the tough choices. It's critical. But y'all provide a key role in that because your conferences and your input helps us understand this issue. I think that's critical. Because otherwise, I'm interpreting law, and to be honest with you, some legislative law that I've read, it's hard to interpret. Y'all break that down. Thank you so much. I think that's great.
That's great. Thank you. We have one more comment right here. We're going to take 2 more minutes on this, and then we do have to move on. Go ahead.
I just want to echo what the gentleman and ladies have been saying. The thing that I want to add to that is, first of all, my name is Dave, and I'm here basically wearing 3 hats. One, I've heard several talk about educating the council. I'm a member of the city council. Two, I'm on the COG for Tooele County, so I'm going to take information back to the county as well as back to the city. Tooele is totally different than most of you because, one, we're not as big as your city, but we've been hit with the same thing that the rest of you have been hit with. And with us, you're right, it is a challenge for the council to get a chamber full of angry citizens because you want to put a multifamily apartment complex in their neighborhood. Tooele, like most of you used to be, very territorial. Because we're still small, it still exists. And I'm sure you and Roy know what I'm talking about. They don't like it. They hate it. And the citizens there, and I get phone calls at my house, people that are longtime residents of, say, Tooele, don't want people that have been there for 5 years. They didn't want them to come. So they definitely don't like people coming in and that have been there for 2 years saying that, I don't want this. And no, they don't want you here. It's what they didn't want. But the council, we understand that there's a need. we've worked with WFRC, we've worked with other people to try to figure this out. Right now we have a plan, and you guys can take whatever if you want. We have a plan. We've had two meetings on a Saturday. We're going to have more meetings, and it's just the council and the mayor, and we sit with the city attorney and the planner and a couple others and try to figure out how we can best satisfy, well, you can't satisfy everybody, how best to make it work. Because we can't say this particular part of town, we can put no apartments, or this particular town is only going to be this way. We know we have to integrate everything. And so what we're trying to do now is to come up with a plan so that this will work. And the only reason I'm saying this is because we could use your help as well, because you guys have been, you're experiencing it. We will be experiencing it. And as it's been predicted, in 20 years, Tooele will have 80,000 people. I don't know if any of you have ever been to Tooele, but the city of Tooele, 80,000 people, one, where are we going to get the water? You know what I'm saying? We only have one entrance to Salt Lake City, and that's Interstate 80. We can go into Riverton on 73. Other than that, we are cut off from this whole side. So when you look at those things and put it all in perspective, we're going to probably be worse than most of you, because we're kind of sort of somewhat isolated. So I try my best to come to these meetings to get information from you guys. I love to listen to what you're saying, and I take it back and I pass it on to not only the county but to the city, because it's something that is valuable what you guys are doing. And just saying it, I totally appreciate each and every one of you when you come up with it, with some of the things that you're saying. And with that, ma'am, I guess I'll shut up.
Thank you.
Erin? Sorry, I'll be quick. And to answer Ari and a little bit to Rachel, but also to WFRC, can you pass me the mic?
Thank you.
To answer the question of kind of what we need, I'm looking at the last two words on the slide and thinking about the priority of open space in the 2050 plan and in the plans in the past. And to the conversations we've had with the communities, formally and informally, we want to preserve our quality of life in our cities. We want to preserve access to recreation and open space. And I think there are regional assets that could be developed, and that 25 million for open space planning that was in the governor's budget and didn't receive any funding. But we know that there's a need. There's not a lot of resources for us, but I think that there's ways for us to balance our growth conversations with preservation conversations about the things we love and the things we need more of in the growing community. So I ask all the organizations that help us make those plans and have those conversations with our own schools to help us focus on the land, on the open space land that we know is a part of it, but we're being forced to put more emphasis on the building structures. Help us balance that.
Thank you.
It's fine to say that what we need is courageous councils to make the right decisions. But the fact of the matter is, if councils start making decisions that people don't like, they're going to end up with a new council who's going to make different decisions. Mm-hmm. We need to educate the populace.
I appreciate that. In our city, over the last decade, it's proven to be pretty much impossible for anyone to be reelected to a second term for that very reason. People just don't like the decisions that are being made, and so they bring somebody new in, and then they learn about what it's about and try to make the right decisions, and then they want to bring somebody new in. And I'm just going to really quickly say what I said. I said this last year at the League conference in one of our meetings, and I'm just going to put it out there. I do think that educating the public, the population, really, I agree, it's the most critical thing. I think that needs to happen. And I would love to see the state take the lead on that. I think we need a public relations campaign. There's been so much education that's taken place, and it's coming from everywhere to those of us who are elected officials to make these right decisions and to zone this way and to plan this way. But nobody's residents like it. The population everywhere doesn't like it. I don't know of any municipality that their residents are saying, that is so great, let's do that. Every single one of us are hearing the same thing. That being the case, I would really love to see the state. So let's figure out who we Who can I go talk to? Who's the right person to talk to? I would love to see the state take the lead on a public relations information campaign. Not to try to brainwash residents, not to try to ramrod residents, but to help educate. So anyway, I'm just putting that out.
And Evan, I think with the state planning coordinator is knee-deep in that. This is probably music to your ears, right, Evan? Oh, yeah.
No, it's certainly a really good point, and it's certainly a conversation we need to have and find the best approach. And appreciate the work that the League and the Chamber have been doing on trying to figure out what the best messaging strategy is, because I think you're absolutely right, everything that's been said. If people don't make that connection of where are my children going to live, we want to keep having kids, but we're not willing to let anyone move into our cities, there's a disconnect that needs to be, a gap that needs to be closed.
Right. And with that, I'm going to, we'll wrap this up here and I'll turn it back over to Ted. I will tell you, agreed, whoever said that high density is a four-letter word, I think it's that way everywhere as well. I think we all encounter that. But we have had some surprising reaction from residents in our city just this week over a development to go in, and when we specified that we were going to add some workforce housing to it for our teachers, for our firefighters, and they actually thought that was a great idea. So for what it's worth, people can appreciate what it means for workforce housing. I think there's just this mental block of that these are our neighbors and our friends and real people who need houses and our kids, because you get that, you know, anything density, and people just block it out. But I think when we can help illustrate this is for real people and these are the people who we need, it helps. So there's that.
One of the things that I thought was really helpful was we had Scotty Writing here several months ago from Y2, and they had done surveys about, you know, what's acceptable to people, and I thought his information was really good. I don't know if that's something.
And I think that's what Aaron was referring to also. Mm-hmm. So you guys are on the same page.
But have you guys sent that out to our communities so that we have a chance to see what those results were yet?
I think it's been shared a lot by the League, but I think there's a clear desire to have more of that happening. So let's work in that direction.
Yeah, I'd love a copy of that.
Okay.
Can I make one point, Mayor?
Yes, absolutely.
I think that along with this is some reassurance that we fight as elected officials to do the right thing to preserve quality of life. It's just that our quality of life is changing, right? The childhood that I knew running through the foothills in my neighborhood is not the childhood my children are having, right? And I think that the emotion around this is real. And I think leadership by the people in this room, education back to councils, standing up sometimes when we know that people are lined up to yell at us and we just have to do what we know is right is really the point. But I think part of this is us really doubling down on the commitments and finding the ways to preserve the open space and finding ways to make sure that when we do go seven stories, Mayor, in West Valley, that apartment complex is done right. And so I think that part of this is a trust conversation where we have to educate not just that growth is happening. I think people get that. It's about a further education about us fighting to preserve the values that people are really looking for in the new world, in this new economy, and doing our best to assure them that we don't want to be Los Angeles' gridlock, and that crime isn't going to overtake the community, and then figuring out and making the investment. And I think we've come a long way in terms of leaders and decision makers understanding that. We held a growth summit after the conversations that occurred around Salt Lake County's approval initially of the Olympia Hills project, which is a Daybreak-like 950-acre development on the border of Harriman on unincorporated county property. And that process received no interest in the public, interestingly. The people wanted to tweet, people wanted to, you know, get all fired up online, which is a reality of the world we're living in today. But we didn't see engagement in that, in terms of, you know, old school people show up to hear about it. So now we're going to take the next step to really move that communication out on our website. Maybe, you know, more acquisition of lists so that we can use email, that type of thing. Communications. This is a lot about communications and education, as everyone's pointed out. And I do think there's a further conversation between Envision Utah and Wasatch and Salt Lake County and our other county partners at where and how we can find the resources to and the process to continue to educate, because I feel like we have the toolbox, and that if we all put the documents on the table together, it's all piled up. The survey, work in your own respective communities. But I think we have to figure out how to get outside of our own kind of internal echo chamber into the hearts and minds of people with that reassurance as well that we are working and understand and we have a plan, and Wasatch Fund's critical in that, I think, too.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, let me conclude this item with just 2 points. Heather, go to the next slide. The 2 points are, one, we always want you to know that we understand you're a local government representative first, and you're a member of the regional council or the regional growth committee second. We know that. We want to help you. If you're grappling with something and you're thinking, boy, if only we had data, analysis, training, assistance that made our life easier, we want to be there for you. We're just trying to help you get to the finish line that you want to get to. So noodle on that. And it's a technical term. And what we'd like to do is continue this conversation in future meetings. Okay, that's point one. Here's point two. In May, again, you're going to have the opportunity to recommend approval of the regional transportation plan. I just want to note that this is the end of a four-year process. So at the end of a four-year process, there's been an incredible amount of refinement done already. This is basically dotting the I's and crossing the T's. If you are new to the Regional Growth Committee, I encourage you to go to the WFRC website and learn about that process. But note that what we're going to do is we will review the process and we will highlight the final products. But it will be, in a sense, it's not a climax. In a sense, it's just the very last step of an exhaustive process that we've all gone on through together. So I just want to note that. And if you have questions about the regional transportation plan and what's going to happen in May, that you can talk to any staff person, especially Georgiana or myself. And that is everything for this agenda item.
Awesome.
Madam Chair.
Thank you so much. Quickly, I wanted to welcome Mayor Jenny Reese with us. Thank you for being here. And next we have Professor Reed Ewing. He spent his career working to understand how to form our communities, how it affects our quality of life, just like Mayor Wilson said. And I do think that's what people are the most afraid of. I think people are just the most concerned that their quality of life will decrease. Today, Professor Ewing will synthesize and discuss key recent research findings on the impact community design has on quality of life, and we appreciate his patience. This discussion went longer than we had budgeted time for, but it was such good information, and I appreciate the collaborative minds of everybody here who's giving input. So, Professor Ewing.
Yes, thank you. That was a great discussion. So Andrew and Ted and I have been communicating, and we're going to cut this short and then come back to some of the other topics. So that's my presentation. Are there any questions? Yeah, I'm just going to talk about the D's. And I honestly think this is better. I could have crammed these topics, you know, how parking affects cities and what is accessibility and why is it important and so on. Could have crammed it into, you know, 12 to 15 minutes, but I think it's better we do one thing right, and that will be the D's. Okay, so we've already talked about one of the D's, the four-letter word. There are other D's that are important, and my take-home message is they are as important as density. Okay, so planners across the country, this is something that kind of invented in the late 1990s, now talk about the D's. These are development density, land use diversity, street design, destination accessibility, and distance to transit. And with the exception of distance to transit, which is the opposite, as the Ds increase, modal alternatives begin to emerge. If you're in a low density area with single use residential, so no land use diversity, with cul-de-sac type street networks and nothing within walking distance or biking distance or short driving distance, and far from transit, you have no alternative to a long distance trip by automobile. As the Ds increase, alternatives emerge, and people, accessibility improves, mobility improves, livability improves. Now, the point isn't that every area has to be dense, diverse, etc. But very clearly, we as a region have made a decision that some areas should be. That those areas, we can have single family, single use areas, but we made a decision that we want to have centers across the region that have the D variables going for them. So people have an alternative to living on a large lot in a single family home with two automobiles or three automobiles and no alternatives. Written a couple books on the Ds, pedestrian and transit oriented design. And I'm not going to be able to go into a lot of detail, but the developments I talk about in the book are all rich in the Ds. They have the Ds going for them. And they can be new urbanists. Daybreak is a new urbanist community. These are two others. I can tell you where they are, but that's not. So you can kind of tell by looking at them what they're selling. Daybreak, by the way, is new urbanist and has been the largest seller of single family homes in this region for years on end. Infill and refill, the D variables. Lifestyle centers. That was Gateway 10 years ago when I first moved here. Obviously, Gateway's been in hard times, but it was a good lifestyle center that had the Ds.
And now it's coming back, baby.
It's coming.
Right?
Because
that's a good anchor. You guys are in.
It's as simple as that. So I'm going to, again, in my very, very short talk, just refer to a new urbanist community with the Ds. It's called Southern Village. I've studied it. I've written about it. It is shown here, a little town's village center, multifamily housing close to the center. These are townhouses and so on. And what is a well-connected street network, even though it's a difficult site from a topographical standpoint, and what does it get them? Well, it gets them about a 40% reduction in the number of vehicle miles each household drives, and about a 20% walk vote share. Yes.
And I didn't mean to interrupt you, Professor Ewing. Can you talk about what is meant by the word design and what is meant by the word diversity? The professor and I were chatting, and he was noting that, you know, a lot of times our conversations revolve around density, but in a lot of ways these other Ds are as important or sometimes more important, and we need to keep them in our brains. Go ahead.
Well, that's a good point. Yeah, I was going to get to that, but when we talk about land use diversity, it means mixing shops and homes in schools and workplaces, all within walking distance of each other. So that's diversity. And the alternative is single-use zoning, Euclidean zoning, where nothing is close to anything else. By design, I mentioned street design. We generally favor, even though when you look at this, it doesn't look like a grid, it is a well-connected street network. So high intersection density, a lot of four-way intersections, very few cul-de-sacs, if any, and so on. So there are multiple ways of getting, and more direct ways of getting from one place to another. So if you live up here, you can walk to the village center, and people do. 20% of the trips are walk trips, which is not 100%. No one's trying to sell the D's as a way to totally divorce ourselves from the automobile. We won't do that, but to provide alternatives to people. Very important. And the VMT, vehicle miles traveled, which I've been talking about in my 10 years on this committee. How many times have you heard me say, worry about VMT, vehicle miles traveled, because it relates to air quality, it relates to affordability of transportation. The more miles you have to drive, the more it cuts into your budget. It relates to fatal accidents, more VMT, higher rates of fatal accidents, because people are exposed more. So anyway, this development has 40% lower VMT than nearby subdivisions that are not built this way with the D's, 40% lower, and about a 20% walk mode share. It doesn't have a lot of transit, and it's frankly, given its location in the Chapel Hill area, you wouldn't expect it to have a lot of transit, but it is very walkable and it's very accessible. And that's, you know, we have access to opportunity, which has become the main theme of our deliberations, and it has provided access to opportunity. So last night I called one of my students and said, I've got to relate this to something local. Southern Village is great, but it's kind of remote from Salt Lake.
Now, Reed, be careful. You know our chair is the mayor of South Jordan.
I'm
just be careful.
I'm interested to hear what you're saying, Daybreak versus South Jordan. Since Daybreak is a community South Jordan.
Daybreak produces. We did a test, and I'm not gonna get academic on you any more than I need to, but it's producing 6.3 fewer vehicle miles driven by people than the rest of South Jordan is.
I'm sure that's true. The popularity of this mixed-use community, Daybreak, it's a huge mixed-use, community development, but the popularity of it is the reason our city is growing by 5,000 residents every year for the next decade, and has been for the past decade. Yeah, people love it.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Are really loving it. So
thank you for that. So we have, I can give you examples locally. This is just one, Daybreak versus the rest of South Jordan, but 6 vehicle miles per household per day fewer. It's on a per day basis.
I'm sure that's
a big deal.
You travel, you're probably aware of the fact we do travel surveys every 8-10 years, whatever, and that's where that came from. Now I'm almost done, Andrew. I'm getting there, Madam Chairman. Okay, just a few more. Survey that was done, the travel survey that was done in 2012. Had a residential preference survey attached to it. So we asked people where they want to live. And some people want to live downtown. Okay, but that's this one right here, that blue. Some people want to live in suburban single-use development. And that's the kind of yellowish orange or whatever this color is right here. But most people, the largest number of people, want to live in a mixed-use suburb, which reminds you of Daybreak, where things are within walking distance of your home. And transit is going to be more and more accessible as more development occurs around the transit stations. So this is not, we're not talking about super high density. Southern Village is 9 units per acre. Daybreak, I think, is going to end up about 9 units per acre. So we're not talking about density.
Nope, Daybreak is not ever going to be 9 units per acre. Daybreak is about 5.6, and it'll stay there.
No, I'm talking about when it's totally built out. It's not going to go past that? Okay. Well, Southern Village is 9, and so it's a little higher density than Daybreak. Last thing, and this is a little bit technical, but this goes to Andrew's point. These are called elasticities, and this is the only technical thing I'm including in this short talk, but the longer the bar is, the bigger the number, the more impact a variable has on an outcome. And the outcome in this case is vehicle miles traveled. And job accessibility by auto. How many jobs can you reach within a half hour by auto or 10 minutes by auto? Very super important in reducing BMT. Intersection density. How many intersections do you have in a square mile? Super and important. Least important is density. Now, people tend to focus on density, but if you have well-connected streets, if you have mixed land uses, if you have destination accessibility and your distance to transit is small, you can reduce BMT and at the same time increase walking and at the same time increase transit use. These are BMTs, are studies from across the spectrum of planning. We gathered them, there were over 200 studies. We did what's called a meta study of the studies and then generalized across them. And density is good and important, but the other D's are equally important, and that's my talk. And that's
great. Will you just read just real quick, go back, please, a few slides. One more, right there. So just want to make sure we're understanding this. So in the middle, you have intersection and street density, and on the bottom, you have household and population density. Yeah. What you're saying here is that the way our intersections on our streets are designed, right, the connectivity is more important than the density and number of units per acre in terms of people's behavior in driving or transit use or whatever. Grand just for example.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying. And this was kind of a surprise, but we had all these studies. We did a study of studies called a meta study, and that's what we found. And it's really good news. It's really good news because you don't have to achieve very high density to begin to have an effect. What you do need, though, is a mix of uses. You need to have things within walking distance. You need to have connected streets, interconnected streets, and you need to have destination accessibility. Yes, sir.
I mean, my only thought as I look at this is, though, if you don't have the density, it's hard to get the transit. And if you have half-acre lots, you're not going to have transit, so you're not going to have transit.
Yes. So when we say density, we're talking density, medium to high density. Now, maybe medium density is the one that's going to sell better to your citizens, for those of you who are mayors of suburban communities. But yeah, you're right, and you're probably not going to get a lot of mix. So that's why density is often emphasized, because people say without density, you don't have any of the other things. But they do have independent effects on BMT, walking, and transit, each of them. And if you have only high density, you probably don't know this, but we have a campus now, the University of Utah, in Songdo, Korea, and it's high rise, and there's no walking. People drive everywhere, because that's all it is, a high rise city. So mid-rise, 5-7 units per acre, you can get very good densities with that. You can get good densities, you get 15 units per acre, 17 units per acre with townhouses. And single family homes can be on small lots at 7 or 8 units per acre, or even a little higher in California. So those are the D's. Does everyone have them now? Okay. So number one.
Density.
Thank you. Number two.
Design.
That's number three.
Diversity.
That's number two.
Diversity.
No, do it. Keep doing. Give them us five again.
Okay,
say them.
Okay. So let's do this.
The words.
I'm going to be probably speaking again. I'll keep it short.
Okay.
Next time too. But density, development density, is the first D. Land use diversity is the second D. Street design is the third D. Destination accessibility is the fourth D. And super important in light of your priorities as a, you know, as a MPO. And then distance to transit, shorter distances, is the fifth D.
And we don't have time for this today, but the concept of a growth center with not density everywhere, but strategic density is sort of, it's not exactly in any one of those items, and it might be something that we talk a little bit more about it in the future.
It deals with all of them.
Right.
Yeah, just...
So you don't have to have density everywhere, but strategic density can be really powerful.
This.
There you go.
This, the purple blob map, is illustrating the fact that there should be areas within the region other than downtown Salt Lake where you have some density and where people can walk to things and close to transit. If you think of plans for downtown Sandy, or the Sandy City Center, that's the sort of thing we're talking about. You think Sugar House, what's happening right now at Sugar House, that's the sort of thing we're talking about. There should be areas, even surrounded by single-family neighborhoods, that provide alternatives to the automobile.
That is such great information. Thank you so much. It's so good. And it really affirms everything that we've just been talking about and leads us really nicely to our next item. Now, I know that this meeting was supposed to be adjourned at this point, and I appreciate if there's anybody who can't stay and has to go. But if anyone is willing to stay, we've got, this is really important, what's next. And I really didn't want to cut our conversation off earlier because I felt like it was very valuable and the input was really helpful. So I'm going to proceed, and we're going to go until about 11:15 if everyone's okay with that. Okay. Thank you. The Transportation and Land Use Connection Program, which we affectionately refer to as the TLC, is a partnership between Wasatch Front Regional Council, Salt Lake County, UDOT, and UTA. And we're happy to have Megan Townsend here with us to provide an update on the TLC program and how it will assist our communities with our growth-related challenges in 2019. So, Megan.
Thank you, Mayor Ramsey. And this is really important, but I think I can get you out of here even sooner than 11:15. I go quickly. So, 2019 awards. This is a really exciting time of year because you get to make awards to you and your communities to do all the things we talk about in this room all the time. So, the Transportation and Land Use Connection Program, our Planning Technical Assistance Program, funded by our partners UDOT, UTA, Salt Lake County, and of course, Wasatch Front Regional Council. This program is ready to make its sixth year of awards, and you guys are really, really the first to hear. Because your staff may not have even opened my email that went out about, you know, an hour ago. So, the TLC program provides technical assistance to local communities to help them achieve their goals and plan for growth. The program helps communities implement changes to the built environment that reduce traffic on roads and enable more people to easily walk, hike, and use transit. So this is all about accomplishing your goals, meeting you where you are, helping to solve your difficult planning issues and those issues posed to you by how fast we grow. Okay, so this year we get to award over $1.2 million in TLC funding, matched by about $300,000 from your communities, for a total of about $1.5 million in projects. So this is really exciting, by far the most we've ever awarded. 15 awards, again, that's the most we've ever awarded, 9 in the Salt Lake urbanized area and 6 in the Ogden Layton urbanized area. And this year, 5 of those 15 are multi-jurisdictional. So that's really, really impressive, the way that your cities are coming together. There's a lot of you in the room that are part of a very good project. So get ready, that's gonna be a lot of fun. But it's really great to see your communities coming together to solve these challenges that are just kind of hard to solve in your individual city boundaries. And then we have some really great deep dives into some individual cities as well. Let's skip these and just talk kind of by project type. So TLC funds visions and plans down to, and then moves those along the line toward implementation to fund ordinance work and policy changes, detailed studies, and then ultimately the ones that these projects implement on the ground making a difference in your community. So these citywide projects, we have the ALCA project name in the works, but kind of a funding prioritization plan, figuring out how to spend their limited dollars in a unique way, because they're outside and different from all the other communities, just like all of your communities are unique. The Kaysville general plan update, really excited to work with Kaysville on that. Magna's general plan update, this is the first project we've ever been able to fund in Magna, so we're very excited about that as well. As they, you know, become an independent city, they definitely need to do some internal thinking about who they are, who they want to become. South Ogden City's comprehensive general plan update as well. So these are the citywide plans we're funding this year. The image on the screen is Taylorsville City. This is, I would call it more of a center project, but looking around the city of Taylorsville at different economic development nodes. So these center plans, we have Murray City's Fashion Place small area plan, trans-oriented area, lots of opportunity for growth and development, and lots of challenges as well. North Salt Lake City's town center branding and wayfinding. So we've worked with North Salt Lake on your town, I'm looking right at you, your town center plan, and then we're moving, right now we're moving through a form-based code to get in zoning, implement the changes of that town center plan, implement that vision, and then now this plan, even more detailed, is looking at branding and wayfinding and how people are going to use and interact with that center. Really an exciting time for North Salt Lake. South Salt Lake City's Neighborhood Master Plan in the Jordan River 300 South area. You know, South Salt Lake is really changing, growing, and they need lots of planning assistance to do that. South Ogden City, a comprehensive general plan update. We've done little centered code work in South Ogden, and now we're bringing that all together so that the vision of the entire city reflects the way that they're going to grow. And the Taylorsville City 2020 vision, so that's this image of just looking at all these different nodes around Taylorsville, and they know that there's potential in each. They want to kind of, you know, dive into that and do some market analyses and find out more about how, you know, how they should grow, how they should regulate those areas. Active transportation plans, this is a huge year for active transportation, and this is where a couple of our, a few of our collaborative plans come in. So, we are funding Clearfield, Syracuse, West Point, Clinton, and Sunset active transportation plan. All of those communities coming together recognizing that active transportation does not stop at the border of their cities. The Mill Creek, Cottonwood Heights, Holiday, Midvale, Murray, and Taylorsville, Mid Valley active transportation plan, so that's pretty much the east half of Salt Lake County. That one's going to be really fun. Sandy and Drake are coming together to work on an active transportation plan as well. And South Weber City actually doing a deep dive on one small connection that's going to connect a lot of trail. If you're not biking around all these places by the end of these projects, we've done something wrong, because this covers a lot of our region with active transportation plans. And finally, multi-city visions around Beaver Writing. We have been really working on this Southwest Salt Lake County visioning project. That's getting an award from us, also us funding community from Salt Lake County and from each of the communities. This is going to be a huge effort to really think through all of the challenges that growth is posing on that Southwest Salt Lake County area. South Jordan, Riverton, West Jordan, Harriman, Bluffdale, and Compton are all part of that project. And of course, that will involve a multitude of stakeholders and a lot of experts to help us solve some big issues. And then the Ogden, both Ogden and South Salt Lake City are going to become case studies in our larger Utah parking modernization initiative, trying to solve some tough parking questions for our entire region and diving deep into a couple of cities to help us do that. Hi, Megan. Call me. Have any questions? Oh my gosh, I totally went to all
of
them. Thank you.
Megan, you can have as much time as you want when you're dishing out $1.5 million. Thank you so much. Is there any other business that anybody wants to bring up? Anything else we need to discuss today?
I would just, once again, the reminder, our full council meets next week, and everybody's invited to our open house and 50th anniversary celebration from 4 to 6 p.m. next week.
Thank you. One final note, Katie will be sending out, will it be you sending it out or somebody else? Okay, Katie Gerard will be sending out a short, very short survey to get feedback from everyone here regarding potential meeting times. Whether we keep it 9:30 to 11, 9:45 to 11:15, or like we did today, 9:30 till 11:15. That's not actually one of the options, but I appreciate your patience and I appreciate your participation in the conversation. Our next meeting is May 16th, and I am prepared to entertain a motion to adjourn. Okay, we're going to give that to Aaron Mendenhall, because they're asking who did what.
Okay, second.
All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
We are adjourned. Thank you.
If anybody wants to do a quick walk around, you're more than welcome to join us for a lap. Thank you.